right shoulder, and he staggered against the pillar and collapsed.
Ha! I guess wizards aren't always in favor of surprises.
The dwarf grinned. He peered round the corner.
There's no one else in sight. I'll wait here, or Nadorn will get suspicious. Just call if you need me.
He looked at her keenly. In the darkness of the underground hall, Namora's eyes looked like hollows once more.
Are you sure you can do this?
Namora tossed the rags to the floor and practiced reaching for Keenfire. You're worried that my dark side will make a traitor of me. He nodded.
Yes.
Well, Boindil Doubleblade, at least you're honest. She bent down and laid a hand on his shoulder. Don't you think it's a little too late to doubt my loyalty? Her expression was as hard and cruel as an elf's, and she looked more terrifying than ever. He tapped his axes together nervously. Her words and gestures were making him jumpy.
Just do something so I know what's what,
he said grumpily. She smiled and left the shelter of the pillar. Very well, I'll do something. Her face remained an inscrutable mask. Nodon was standing halfway along the walkway. He raised his right arm and traced a symbol in the air, conjuring the first runes of a devastating spell that would put pay to the defender's determined resistance. In his bloated left hand, he held his onyx-tipped staff of white maple. The black jewel was glimmering malevolently. Namora could tell that it was no use sneaking up on him, and that an all-out assault would be equally doomed. She would have to rely on cunning and dissimulation to get within striking distance of Gerdlegard's most dangerous and powerful wizard. She held her hand to her bloodied neck, pressing on her wound. All her efforts were focused on appearing injured, and she made her performance as authentic as possible, swaying and stumbling along the bridge.
Master, she groaned. They've destroyed the tower. It was Andokai.
He froze and turned sharply. His waxy skin wobbled as if it were filled with rippling water.
Andokai, he rasped. Where is she?
Outside, Master. She's using her magic against our troops.
She took a few faltering steps toward him. Only 10 paces remained, an impossibly long distance.
How can we stop her?
Nodon shuffled round to face her. She saw his huge girth, the puffed-up face that bore no resemblance to Nudine's, the blood seeping from his pores and running in red trickles across his skin and soaking his robes. Dark patches, some still glistening moistly, stained the green cloth that was caked with blood and grime. The smell was enough to make anyone retch.
"She's too powerful for you," he said,
his voice cracking as if two people were speaking at once.
"You won't be able to stop her. Show me where you last saw her, and I'll take care of her myself. Lead the way."
5 paces.
I need to get closer to him.
Namora stumbled and sank to her knees.
Master, I'm hurt. Have pity on me and heal my wounds so I can serve you better.
Later,
he told her sharply.
Get up and...
His gaze had fallen on a particularly ferocious skirmish at the center of which was Tungdil, still locked in combat with Synthoris and his orcs.
Lotionan's groundling? But that's not... I mean, I thought the artifacts were...
He fell silent and collected his thoughts.
Well, things have got a good deal easier.
The Magus closed his eyes. Namora saw her opportunity and decided to act. Slowly and silently, so as not to attract attention, she rose from her knees and took a nervous step toward him, then another. 4 paces. 3 paces. 2 paces. She reached for Keenfire.
1 more pace.
Master, look out!
Someone shouted across the hall. Namora drew the axe and brought it down with all her might. Nodon turned away from Tungdil and directed the curse at her. Namora felt as if she were staring into the sun. The dazzling light seared into her eyes, and before she knew it, she was flying backward through the air. She thudded down, landing heavily on the walkway, still blinded, but with Keenfire gripped tightly in her hand. She couldn't see Nodon, but it was obvious that he'd evaded her blow.
Why am I still alive, then?
She ran her hands over her body and felt the smooth surface of the amulet given to her by Andukai.
That must be it.
Finish her off and bring the axe to me,
she heard the Magus order. The clicking of his wooden staff against the flagstones receded into the distance. Little by little, her eyes cleared, and she caught a hazy glimpse of the malachite robe disappearing down the staircase. Gasping with pain, she struggled up, intent on running after the traitor and cutting him down. The amulet would protect her. She was almost on her feet when a shadow hurtled out of nowhere. Whooshing over her head, the dark figure landed lightly on the walkway in front of her. Two short swords pointed menacingly at her chest.
You should have known that the perished land would allow me to avenge myself, said Cathalor.
Namora stared at the deep wound where her blade had gashed his throat.
If I thought you were a danger, I would have beheaded you, she said coldly. You're no threat to us.
She held the axe on high, knowing that Cathalor would kill her if he sensed she was afraid. The elf lunged at her, snarling, and Namora realized that she would never keep pace with his attack. She retaliated with an offensive of her own and laid open the undead warrior's shoulder. The axe cut into his flesh, but Cathalor was undaunted.
I'll cut you to ribbons, eat your flesh, and paint a portrait of your ravaged body with your blood, he spat, raising his weapons again.
Harrying her with his swords, he maneuvered her closer and closer to the edge of the walkway. Belatedly, she noticed that she was only a handspan away from plummeting to her death. Cathalor dropped down suddenly and swiped at her calves. She leapt over him, whirled around, and swung her axe to finish his undead existence. But the elf had thrown himself to the floor and rolled over, ready to thrust his swords toward her as she delivered the final blow. The axe head scraped along the stone floor, sparks flying everywhere, then sliced sideways into the elf's neck, settling the matter forever. Cathalor's eyes widened. But his final maneuver had not been in vain. His swords had pierced Namora's armor and embedded themselves beneath her collarbone. The half-elf found herself skewered above his corpse, unable to think or move. Through the haze of her consciousness, she saw the amulet fall from her neck, hit Cathalor, and bounce off the walkway. The leather band, sliced in two by the elf, unraveled onto his chest.
I still haven't...
She tried to call to the others, but her gored chest and her ebbing strength turned her shout to a whisper. She could feel herself slipping out of consciousness, and there was nothing she could do. Her legs gave way, and she slumped over Cathalor, her chest still propped up by his swords. Suddenly, she felt unbearably cold. Incapable of even the smallest movement, she dangled above her foe.
Fergus.
She had nothing left to give. Her fingers opened against her will, and Keenfire fell from her grip. Clattering to the walkway, the axe bounced against the flagstones and flew over the edge. Chapter 10 Blacksaddle, Kingdom of Gauragar, Girdlegard, Winter, 6,234th Solar Cycle. Tungdil glanced up and saw Namora on the walkway. The sight of her impaled on Cathalor's swords filled him with helpless rage. Meanwhile, Nodon was descending the final steps of the staircase, only paces away from Tungdil and the others. They were running out of time.
We'll be lost without Keenfire.
I'll get the axe, he shouted to Belindis. Keep the orcs busy and watch out for Nodon. Andukai will have to take care of him until I get back.
The firstling nodded grimly and felled a beast that was about to lunge at Tungdil.
Hurry!
Tungdil detached himself from the scrum and blew his horn to summon the warriors of the three dwarven folks who were fighting in the other halls. His call was answered by blaring bugles and the sound of dwarven axes on orcish mail. He hoped that the upsurge in fighting would preoccupy the enemy and allow him to slip past unnoticed.
Vrakus, your name will be worshipped forever if you help me now.
He finished his quick prayer, took a deep breath, and charged into the jumble of stinking armor and legs. No matter how tempting it was to clear a path with his axe, he knew that his safety depended on stealth. Crouching low, he tried to scurry past the beasts without brushing against them. It would have been easy for a scrawny gnome like Sverd, but Tungdil was considerably broader. Every now and then, he was spotted by an orc, but he kept moving to avoid being caught. Twice he was seized by a clawed hand and had to use his axe to slice his way free. At last, he reached the place where Keenfire had fallen to the ground. He scanned the flagstones, but the axe had vanished.
Tungdil, I've got something for you. Over here.
He turned in time to see the back of a dwarven warrior disappear from view. Keenfire's axe head glittered in his hands.
Come and get it.
This is no time for silly games.
Tungdil set off in pursuit, dragging his wounded leg across the floor. He left the muddle of orcish shins and made for the shelter of a pillar. The beasts rushed on, too focused on defeating the dwarven army to notice what was unfolding behind them. To his surprise, the dwarf turned and held out Keenfire toward him. Tungdil stared at him in bewilderment.
You?
Looking for this? Asked Bislapur.
His body was twisted out of shape, his face a mass of shattered bone. Judging by his fractured skull, he had fallen from a great height. Tungdil could barely stand to look at him.
I see you've been punished for your plotting then, he said grimly, gripping his axe in readiness. He must be a revenant.
I told King Gandagar. I don't give a damn about Gandagar.
You lowered yourself to all kinds of trickery to have him crowned, and now he means nothing to you.
All I ever cared about was having a High King who would do my bidding. A High King whom I could control.
He swung the axe playfully.
A war against the elves, that's what I wanted. I even murdered Gandalgar's father and brother so I could blame the elves and stoke his fury. How was I to know that I wouldn't need the pointy ears? It's turned out better than I expected.
He pointed to the dwarves locked in combat around them and laughed.
Don't you get it, Tungdil?
He said, noticing the other's uncomprehending stare.
I'm a thirdling, and so are you.
No,
whispered Tungdil. The shouts, screams, and ringing metal seemed to fade into nothingness as he stared into Bislapur's knowing eyes. He tried not to remember how he had initially felt drawn to him.
A thirdling? But I can't be. I'm a fourthling, a dwarf of Goimdil.
Like me, you mean?
Bislapur laughed in his face.
Tungdil, our destiny is revenge. Lorimbur was scorned by his brothers. They wouldn't share their talents, and they mocked the thirdlings because they thought they were better. The gifts they received from Vrakas made them arrogant, like the elves. Don't you see how they treated you?
He took a step forward.
Noble Gundrabur and his loyal counselor, Belendilin, used you to suit their purpose. Why else do you think they were interested in you? If Lotharjonan's letter had arrived at any other time, they would never have bothered fetching you from the Longans. That's how much they care. They're worthless, every last one of them. They all deserve to die.
Tungdil felt the words cut into his heart and found himself succumbing to Bislapur's hypnotic stare.
No, he said hesitantly. Belindis.
Bislapur laughed spitefully.
So you've fallen for someone, have you? And how do you think she'll react when she finds out you're a dwarf killer and a traitor? Your future is with the Thirdlings, not here. You'll die with the others if you stay.
A traitor?
Tungdil stared at the battle in sudden understanding. At last he grasped the full meaning of Bislapur's words.
It was you! You betrayed us to Nadon!
Nadon is a great ally, the greatest. I promised him that the Thirdlings would do nothing to stop him, provided that the other kingdoms were destroyed. It was the perfect opportunity.
Tungdil swallowed and tightened his grip on his axe.
You're crazy! You delivered up Gerdlegard just because...
No!
The Thirdling screeched suddenly.
Not just because of anything. This is our destiny. For thousands of cycles we've been waiting for a moment like this. No deed could be more glorious, Tungdil. Our folk, the dwarves of Lorimbur, will rule all 5 ranges of Girdlegard, once the others are dead. I don't want anything to do with you or your folk. I came here to stop Nodon and save the dwarves. I don't belong to Lorimbur.
You are one of us,
Bislipur told him fiercely.
I knew it from the moment I saw you. Look inside your heart and embrace your hatred. You're a Thirdling, believe me.
Believe you? Why should I believe a traitor?
Tungdil glared at him scornfully and took a deep breath.
Now give me Keenfire!
Bislipur stared at him suspiciously.
Why?
So Nodon can be killed. As for your punishment, I'll leave that to Gandagar and the others to decide.
It's like that, is it?
He thumped the axe regretfully.
I'm afraid I'll have to kill you, Tungdil. You risked everything for Keenfire, and now the weapon will be your death. It seems a shame to...
Tungdil raised his axe without warning, but Bislipur countered his blow. From then on, both dwarves fought mercilessly, but neither could win the upper hand.
So you still think you're not a Thirdling, do you?
The traitor asked mockingly.
How else would you have learned to fight so well in such a short space of time? You were born a warrior.
No!
Thundered Tungdil, slashing at him furiously.
I'll never be a Thirdling!
The two axes collided, and Keenfire shattered Tungdil's weapon. The axe head spun into the air and struck Tungdil's noseguard with enough force to make him see stars. Bislipur didn't wait for him to recover, but moved in fast. Tungdil tried to step out of the way and stumbled. At the last moment, he pulled Bislipur with him, and they wrestled each other to the ground. The battle continued on the floor, the two dwarves hacking at each other until Keenfire fell from Bislipur's grasp. He whipped out a dagger and rammed it into Tungdil's arm. Gasping, Tungdil grabbed his knife and plunged it into Bislipur's throat.
You're wasting your time, Bislipur said derisively. See what Blendalin did to me. He couldn't kill me. The Perished Land wouldn't let him.
He landed a punch that knocked off Tungdil's helmet, then seized his chance to scramble to safety. A well-aimed kick sent Tungdil's knife flying out of his hand.
It's not a fair fight, Tungdil, and you're about to lose.
His fingers wound their way into Tungdil's hair and hauled him up.
I'll give you one last chance, because you're a Thirdling,
he snarled.
Do you want to die with the other scum, or come back with me and celebrate our victory?
Tungdil had run out of weapons and had only one option. Fumbling in his pouch, he pulled out Sverd's collar and looped it around the startled Bislipur's neck.
The gnome's choker? What good will that do? I'm dead already. I don't need air.
Sure, but you can't do without your head.
Tungdil shoved him backward. The maneuver cost him a clump of hair, but allowed him to reach for the magic wire on Bislipur's belt.
And it's your head that I'm after.
A sudden jerk, and the noose closed around Bislipur's neck. The collar tightened, cutting into Bislipur's throat. At last, the Thirdling realized what Tungdil was intending to do. Grunting inarticulately because of the pressure on his throat, he jabbed his dagger toward Tungdil, who tugged on the wire. The choker passed through Bislipur's neck, slicing through his spinal cord. The wire ran through its clasp, the noose sprang open, and the traitor's head rolled across the floor. The hateful collar fell apart, its evil charm broken. There was no time for Tungdil to savor his victory. Gathering up Keenfire, he ran as fast as his injuries would permit him, determined to stand by his friends in the fight against the Magus. The axe was back in their possession. Now all they needed was an enemy of the dwarves who could wield it against Nodon. The orcs drew back to let the Magus through. Suddenly everyone stopped fighting.
Hello, Andokai,
rasped Nodon, inclining his head toward her.
You should have allied yourself with me from the beginning, instead of squandering your strength in futile resistance. I'll need your power to fight the peril from the west.
The peril is here already. It lives within you, confusing your thoughts and steering your deeds.
she focused her energy on maintaining her protective shield. The demon is using you, Nadine.
He's my friend. A loyal friend of Gerdligard.
He shook his head despairingly.
You don't understand. No one understands.
You're right, Nadine. We don't understand. How many men, elves, and dwarves must die so you can protect our kingdoms? It seems a high price to pay, especially when the supposed peril is a figment of your poisoned mind.
My name is Nodon.
His voice became a shrill, nasal shout.
When you see what's coming from the west, you'll be grateful that my friend and I protected you. Lay down your weapons, and I'll spare you.
There was an urgency to his double-fold voice. He seemed fully convinced of everything he said.
I did what I did because you gave me no choice. If you'd relinquished your power, it would never have come to this.
Andokai's sword flashed as she raised her arm defiantly. How am I supposed to believe you after all the suffering you've caused? He looked at her sadly.
In that case, we'll have to finish things properly. You've had your chance.
With a wave of his hand, he shattered her protective spell. Synthoris heard the shield collapse and lunged at the Maegar. She battered away his spear, only to find herself under attack from three orcs who crowded round her, cutting her off from her companions. Suddenly, the Alf was beside her, and this time his spear was headed straight for her chest. It collided with a shimmering shield. Synthoris was sheathed in violet light. A terrible roar shook the hall, then Jerun's sword swooped down. The Alf barely had time to raise his weapon. No wood in the world, not even Sigurdaisy wood, could have withstood such a blow. The giant's sword sliced through the spear and sped on. A wide, sweeping blow parted the disbelieving Alf's head from his shoulders, and Synthoris's headless body slumped to the ground, never to rise again. Grunting in terror, the orcs shrank back from the king of the beasts as he straightened up, howling, and opened his visor. His face was invisible in the blinding light, but the orcs were rooted with fear, allowing the company to regroup. Tungdil, still clutching Keenfire, limped toward the Maegar.
I've got the weapon!
He pointed to Jerun.
Is he an enemy of the dwarves?
He asked, panting for breath.
I don't know. Are you prepared to give him Keenfire? We don't have a choice.
He tossed the weapon to the giant. Without hesitating, Jerun discarded his sword by ramming it through two orcs and reached out to catch the axe.
Let's get this over with.
Tungdil raised his horn and sounded a long, powerful call. The dwarves of Beroween, Borengar, and Goimdil answered with cheers and blaring bugles.
For Vrakis and Gerdligard!
He shouted, leading the charge against the Magus. Belindis and Gandagar were already at his side. The others stormed after them. They hewed down the orcs and Bognilim in their way, cutting a path of gory destruction that brought Jerun within striking distance of their foe. Andokai conjured a bolt of lightning, whose purpose was to dazzle the Magus, then gave the command for Jerun to strike. Before Nodon had time to compose himself, the mailed giant brought down the axe. It hit the Magus's unprotected back, sliced through his body, and sped out of his chest. Stinking black fluid spurted everywhere, showering the transfixed onlookers. Nodon let out a terrible howl. The hall was still echoing with his screams when the wound began to heal.
No! Whispered Tungdil in horror. It's not possible! Keenfire was supposed to...
Nodon hurled bolts of black lightning at the giant, who fell backward and lay still among the orcs.
I told you that nothing can hurt me,
thundered the Magus. He bore no sign of injury, save for the gash in his robes.
We can't let it end this way.
Filled with desperate fury, Tungdil went on the offensive. While his friends tried to preoccupy the Magus by engaging him in an increasingly hopeless battle, he set off a second time in search of the axe. He found Keenfire in Jerun's stiff metal grasp. Prizing away the giant's fingers, he picked up the axe and felt a strange sensation in his hand.
What?
Light pulsed through the intarsia, and the diamonds came to life, shining and sparkling like a thousand miniature suns. At first he thought Nodon had worked a spell on it, but then he saw that the axe itself had wrought the change. Keenfire was readying itself to fight the demon.
By Vrakas, Bisnapur was right. I'm a thirdling.
No sooner had he grasped the significance of what was happening than he decided to turn his heritage to the good. He tightened his grip on Keenfire, squared his shoulders, and charged. Orcs tried to block his path, but perished in a blaze of white fire as he swung the shimmering axe. A trail of smoke followed the swinging Keenfire, and Tungdil could feel the heat from its blade. It burned with the fierce ardor of the Fifthling's furnace. Nodon recognized the danger before it was upon him. His self-assurance vanished, replaced by pure terror. His magic could do nothing against the charging dwarf. Tungdil was protected from harm by Keenfire's runes.
"Kill me, and Gerdlegard will be doomed,"
the Magus prophesied.
"Terrible forces are gathering in the west, and you won't be able to stop them."
He thrust his staff at Tungdil, who deflected the blow and lunged closer.
"You'll be to blame for Gerdlegard's destruction. You must let me live."
Tungdil slashed at the Magus's onyx-tipped staff. The black jewel shattered in a shower of dark crystals.
"No, Nodon! Evil will never triumph over Gerdlegard! We'll protect our kingdoms, just as we protected them from you!"
Tungdil swung his axe again.
"For Lotionen, Frala, and her daughters."
The corpulent Magus tried in vain to sidestep the blow. Even his final incantation failed to halt the blade, his hastily conjured runes flickering briefly as Keenfire smashed through them. The diamond-studded axe head buried itself in Nodon's waist. Like an overripe fruit, the Magus burst, spilling a foul mess of flesh, blood, and entrails. A finger-length splinter of malachite shot out and was swept away in the reeking cascade. Slowly, a shimmering wisp of mist detached itself from the wreckage. It expanded rapidly, coursing with black, silver, and crimson flashes and looming 5 paces in the air. Fist-sized orbs burned red within its cavernous eyes as it stared with hatred and malice at Tungdil. Then it shifted its gaze to the Maga.
"It needs a new victim."
The swirling mist reached out toward Andukai, who took a step backward. She raised her sword, but the blade slid straight through it. The mist shrank, sprouting thin, transparent arms and imprisoning the Maga in its grasp. Groaning, Andukai staggered and fell to her knees, as fingers of mist prized themselves experimentally between her jaws. The being was determined to find a new home, with or without her permission. Tungdil leapt toward her, bringing down his axe just as the flickering column of mist readied itself to glide down her throat. Keenfire's runes sparkled as it hewed the mist in two. There was a loud hiss as the mist drew back like a wounded beast. Tungdil closed in, swinging his axe and slashing at the mist. Thin wisps floated through the hall and dispersed into nothingness. But the demon was still alive and seemed intent on escaping to the ceiling.
"In that case, I'll have to try another tactic."
Tungdil climbed onto an upturned pillar. Pain shot through his wounded arm and leg as he sprinted forward, casting himself into the air and brandishing Keenfire.
"For Vrakas!"
He had timed the leap well. Soaring into the middle of the mist, his blade found its target. Runes blazing, the axe head left a comet-like trail of light. The diamonds sparkled fiercely. For the span of a heartbeat, Tungdil hovered at the heart of the demon. At first it seemed as if the mist had stopped his fall. Then there was a tearing noise and a terrible groan. Tungdil plunged through the mist, skidded across the floor, and was saved by his chainmail from serious cuts and grazes. Looking round, he saw he had punched a hole through the flickering demon. Slowly, the being sank to the ground, turning first grey, then black, then disappearing altogether. In the end, there was nothing left. No one moved. Dwarves and beasts alike had witnessed the death of the Magus and the destruction of the demon. It was deathly still. One of the Alf, who moments earlier had been spurring the hordes against the dwarves, reached to his neck, screaming with pain. Suddenly his amulet burst apart, tearing him to pieces. Soon the other Alfar and a number of orcish chieftains were dead or dying, slain by the Magus's gifts. A bugle sounded the attack, and the dwarves of the Three Kingdoms fell upon their foes. The Bognilim were the first to flee, followed by the orcs. But the children of the smith showed no pity or mercy, funneling them into the narrow passageways where the battle continued. In the vast halls, the ceilings echoed with the clatter and ringing of furious axes. Slowly, Tungdil picked himself up from the floor. Belindis was beside him, helping him to his feet.
"You did it!"
She leaned forward and gave him a lingering kiss on the lips. It was a moment he had dreamed of, but the truth about his lineage spoiled it.
"Only because I'm a thirdling," he said bitterly. "A dwarf killer," he added silently.
She nodded.
"Praise be to Vrakas! Nodon would still be alive if you weren't."
She smiled.
"You're a true dwarf, Tungdil. I don't care which folk you belong to. I know in my heart that I can trust you, and that's what counts."
He gave her hand a grateful squeeze.
"Let's hope the others are as understanding."
Meanwhile, Andokai and a unit of dwarves had stormed the walkway and were attending to the wounded Narmora. Boindil had been cut down by Cathalor and needed the Maegar's attentions as well. Jerun was back on his feet again, his visor firmly closed and his face still a mystery. Dwarven healers hurried over with water, balms, and dressings. Now that the duel with the demon was over, Tungdil was acutely aware of his injuries and allowed himself to be salved and bandaged. He found a worthy place for Keenfire in Gaselbert Ironeye's belt. He didn't have much opportunity to relax. Already Rodario was hurrying toward him.
"My apologies for bothering Gerdlegard's valiant hero, but I think we should check on Fergus," he said anxiously. "Who knows what..."
"Valiant hero," Tungdil grinned. "Not bad for a scholar. I hope Frala and Lot Ionen can see me now."
He straightened up and checked his bandages.
"In that case, I'll have to rejoin the battle. In books, the hero always keeps fighting to the end."
"Blasted Alfar, they always keep up on you. I didn't hear him coming. He loomed up like a shadow and attacked me from behind."
Bowindil, his chest swathed in bandages, hobbled down the stairs.
"That's right, scholar, just like in a book. My brother would be proud of you."
"Boindil!"
Smiling with relief, Tungdil thumped him gently on the back. The thought of losing another friend had been too much to bear.
"Let's check on Fergus."
Tungdil, Rodario, Belindis, Boindil and Jerun hurried away. Andokai caught up with them after a few paces. They had started the journey as strangers and wanted to end it as friends. Blacksaddle, Kingdom of Gauragar, Gerdlegard, Winter, 6,234th Solar Cycle. A chill wind was buffeting the flat summit of the Blacksaddle, but shafts of sunlight shone through the clouds and warmed the earth, heralding the coming of spring.
"For many cycles, this mountain was known as a place of foreboding, a dreaded stronghold where a plot was hatched to destroy the dwarven race. Today's events have changed all that. From this day forth, the Black Saddle will be seen as a symbol of hope, a symbol of a better future in which elves, men, and dwarves will work together for the good of Gerdlegard."
Gandagar paused for a moment and surveyed the assortment of leaders and warriors gathered on top of the Black Saddle. Half a cycle ago, he would have ridiculed the idea of elven, human, and dwarven rulers uniting on the accursed peak to celebrate a battle fought as allies, not foes. His eyes travelled over the faces before him. Prince Malin of Ido was sitting beside Lord Liutisil of Alandur. Next came King Belendalin Onearm of the clan of the Firmfingers, and Queen Xamtis II of the clan of the Stubbornstreaks. And behind them were Nate, Bruron, and the other human sovereigns, not forgetting Andokai, of course. After that, there was a short gap to the first row of commoners, made up of Gerdlegard's most distinguished warriors. Dwarves, elves, and men. They were straining to hear what their leaders were discussing. Gandagar could see Tungdil and Belindis among them, with Jerun towering like a pinnacle at their side.
"Together, we defeated the monstrous issue of Nadine the Knowledge Lusty's alliance with a demon from the north. Nodon is dead. The Perish Land has been banished from Gerdlegard, and nature is returning to her ancient ways. Together, we achieved all this. And our kingdoms were saved, saved because we buried old grudges, overcame our mutual distrust, and joined forces in Gerdlegard's hour of need."
He raised his arms.
"We prevailed! Is this not reason enough to forget our past quarrels?"
He waited for a moment, allowing his words to take effect.
"You, Prince Malin of Ido, rallied the human warriors after their defeat at Porista, and led the united army to the Black Saddle in a courageous stand against Nodon."
He smiled solemnly at Idoslane's ruler, then turned to face the elven leader.
"And you, Lord Liutasil of Alandur, welcomed us into your kingdom when we asked for your help. Your heart must have counseled you against it, but you came to our aid."
He looked at Belendilin and Xamtis.
"And you, worthy children of the smith, you reforged the bonds between our kingdoms and honored the duty entrusted to us by Vrakas."
He raised his voice triumphantly.
"Friends, together we rescued Gerdlegard!"
The warriors of the assembled races thumped their shields and banged their weapons together.
"We must rid our hearts of hatred. Our past battles are just that. They belong in the past and are best forgotten. This orbit marks the start of a new age, one of peace, cooperation, and friendship."
He held his axe aloft, and the other monarchs rose to their feet to pledge a new era of friendship. This time, his speech was met with deafening cheers. Swept away by the excitement, Belindis planted another kiss on Tungdil's lips. Even in the last moments of the battle, she hadn't known whether or not they would succeed, and now she was overcome with gladness and relief.
"You must be really proud," she said.
"Proud of what? Being a thirdling?" he retorted, only half joking. His voice was edged with resentment.
"Proud of being the only thirdling to save the dwarven folks instead of trying to destroy them."
She smiled.
"Come on, Tungdil. We're lucky to have made it alive."
He thought of Narmora and Fergus lying side by side in the stronghold. They would have shared a different fate if Andokai hadn't summoned the last of her strength to invoke a healing charm. Dwarven physicians were still tending to their wounds. Then there were those who had been gathered to Vrakas's smithy.
"I haven't forgotten you, Bavragor and Goimgar."
He looked up to see Gandagar pointing straight at him.
"But above all, we owe our thanks to Tungdil Goldhand,"
announced the Dwarven King.
"Step forward, Tungdil."
Nervously, he obeyed.
"Take a good look at him. For without Tungdil, without his stubbornness, his ingenuity, and most important, his unshakable faith in our mission, none of us would be standing here today. Without Tungdil Goldhand, Nodon would have killed or enslaved us all."
Suddenly it seemed to Tungdil that every dwarf, elf, and man on the Black Saddle was staring at him. He blushed and felt terribly embarrassed. He reached down and rested a hand on Keenfire, which made him feel slightly less shy.
"We will never be in a position to repay our debt," said Gandagar gravely. "But know this. For as long as you live, Tungdil Goldhand, I will do everything in my power to satisfy your every wish."
Liutasil turned his slender, graceful face toward him. "We have never numbered among the dwarves' closest friends, but we are beholden to you, Tungdil Goldhand. We too will grant you whatever you desire." The human sovereigns swore similar oaths of gratitude, while Tungdil squirmed in embarrassment.
"Prithee, stop, your majesties!"
he interrupted. Boindil rolled his eyes.
"Here he goes again. Wake me up when he's finished."
Tungdil took a deep breath.
"You don't owe me anything. My only wish has been granted already. All I want is for dwarves, elves, and men to come together in friendship, not war. You pledged an end to our quarreling, and what more could I desire? Gold and riches count for nothing without peace. I can't accept your gifts, but I shall gladly accept your thanks, especially on behalf of my companions, Bavrigor Hammerfist of the Clan of the Hammerfists, and Goimgar Shimmerbeard of the Clan of the Shimmerbeards. Bavrigor and Goimgar risked everything for Gerdlegard, and they paid the highest price. Keenfire would never have been forged without them."
The elven lord inclined his head toward him.
"You speak with the wisdom of a true leader, Tungdil Goldhand. If ever we are in danger of resuming our old rivalries, you must remind us of the oaths of friendship sworn today. You will always be welcome in Alandur."
There was thunderous applause from the warriors, who hammered on their shields, sounded their bugles, and cheered tirelessly. Tungdil scurried back to Belindis's side. Boindil pretended to scowl at him.
"Show us your tongue," he demanded. "I bet you've talked it into knots."
Tungdil just grinned. He was happy that his lessons in rhetoric had been put to proper use. After a while, the assembly dissolved, and the allied armies retired to the stronghold to celebrate their victory and negotiate their newfound friendship. Belendilin and Gandagar joined the others.
"What an orbit this has been," the secondling king said happily. "Who would have thought it would turn out so well?"
He thumped Tungdil on the shoulder.
"Vrakas sent us the dwarf of all dwarves, and if anyone cares to dispute it, I'll set up another contest with 5 new tasks."
He laughed, and the others joined in. Gandagar noticed that Tungdil's jollity seemed a little forced.
"Is there something the matter?"
"It's nothing."
"No, something's wrong. Is it because you think you're a thirdling?"
"I am a thirdling. How else could I have awoken Keenfire's power?"
"Then be proud to be a thirdling, Tungdil,"
Belendilin exhorted him solemnly.
"Show your kinsfolk, show every dwarf in Gerdlegard, that Lorimbor's descendants aren't all as dastardly and conniving as Bislapur and Glamdolin. Incidentally," he added with a mischievous smile, "were you planning to return to Ogre's death, or is there somewhere else you'd rather be?"
"Belindis and I won't be going to the Firstling Kingdom, if that's what you mean," he said, grinning bashfully. "We're both smiths at heart, and our interests and experiences have soldered us together. We've decided to go to the Grey Range. Boindil's coming with us, and we'll pick up Boendal on the way. I promised Giselbert Ironeye that I wouldn't abandon his kingdom, and I intend to keep my word."
The rising winds carried a foul smell to their nostrils. It came from the plains around the Black Saddle, where the corpses of ogres, orcs, Bognalim, and Alfar were strewn. The combined army of elves, dwarves, and men had laid waste to the enemy battalions. A few undead troopers had survived the massacre, only to lose their lives forever with the defeat of the perished land. Their corpses were rotting in the winter sunshine, but the carnage would soon be frozen overnight.
"It will take time to bury all the bodies,"
Gandagar said grimly. "I hope the earth can suffer so much death."
Rodario joined them, quill and notebook in hand.
"A magnificent finale for a play, don't you think? Too many corpses for practical purposes. We'd never fit them on stage."
He stopped making notes and extended his hand toward Tungdil.
"It was a privilege to accompany you. If you find yourself in Mifordania, be sure to visit the Curiosum. We'll be celebrating our grand reopening."
He winked at Tungdil.
"As the star of the show, you'll qualify for free admission. And Belindis as well."
"When are you off?"
"As soon as my propmaster and my leading lady are fit to ride. A fortnight or so, I expect. In the meantime, they've found room for us here."
Andokai strode toward them.
"Jerun and I are leaving. I need to get back to my realm and find some new Famuli."
"Why the hurry, dear heart?"
Rodario said lightly. The Maga refused to be drawn. I don't want to spoil the mood.
Impossible, he declared with overblown enthusiasm. Nothing could spoil a victory like this.
I wouldn't be so sure. Her lips were unsmiling. What if Nadan wasn't lying after all?
About the Western peril?
The impresario laughed incredulously.
My dear lady, you shouldn't be fooled by a cheap trick like that. You disappoint me.
Say what you like, but I intend to be vigilant. She laid her hand on Tungdil's arm. At least I'll know where to find Keenfire and its valiant bearer, should Nudin prove right. At last her stern face relaxed. You're stubborn enough to take on any kind of peril single-handed, she told him. She took her leave of the company, giving everyone except Rodario a long embrace. He pouted and stalked away, only to turn after a few paces and wave.
Farewell, enchanting Maga. I shall take your advice and devote my attentions to women who know how to appreciate me. And believe me, they do.
Andokai hurried away, followed as always by Jerun. The others watched in silence as the strange pair passed from sight. Belendilin called the group to attention by clearing his throat.
I must take my leave as well, dear friends. The assembly will soon be meeting to decide the succession, and I need to make sure that everything's in place.
He inclined his head toward Gandugar.
I don't doubt that the delegates will vote in your favor. You have proven yourself a worthy heir since stepping out of Bislapur's shadow. I know you will make an excellent High King.
I'd even vote for him myself,
said Tungdil with a grin. He held out his hand to Gandugar, who shook it firmly and seemed moved.
Don't forget to send 100 of your best warriors and artisans to the Fifthling Kingdom. That goes for all the folks. Belindis and I will appreciate the company, and we won't be able to defend the stone gateway on our own. I want to rebuild Giselbert's kingdom.
He paused for a moment, remembering the promise he had made.
The Grey Range will belong to the children of Rakkas. Who knows, perhaps our mysterious rescuers will join us. They might be glad to leave the drafty tunnels for a more comfortable home.
You should certainly ask them, Gandagar concurred.
Vrakas will be proud to see us forging a folk of our own. But what should we do about the Thirdlings?
Belendilin asked. Tungdil turned to the east and gazed in the direction of the Black Range, where Lorimbo's descendants had made their home.
I can't be the only Thirdling who wasn't born to hate his fellow dwarves, he said softly. Once things are settled in the Fifthling Kingdom, I'll pay them a visit and see what they have to say.
He looked into the eyes of the three dwarven rulers.
I meant what I said when I asked for peace. The Thirdlings are no exception.
Belindis smiled and took his hand. He gave it a little squeeze. Gradually the others made their way down from the mountain. Belindis and Tungdil lingered on the summit until the sun dropped below the horizon and stars filled the sky. There was a crisp chill in the air, reminding them that Gerdlegard was still in the grip of winter. Tungdil had wrapped his fingers around Belindis's hand and had no intention of letting go. Just then, a shooting star left a glittering trail from east to west, the white light turning red as it shot across the sky. There was a brief red flare, then the light dispersed into myriad crimson dots that reminded Tungdil of scattered blood. At last they were swallowed by the darkness of the sky.
Was that a good or a bad omen, do you think?
Belindis asked uncertainly. He gave a shrug, then stepped back and hugged her from behind.
A good omen,
he said after a short silence, running his hand over her downy cheeks.
How do you know?
He studied the night sky and spotted the distant lights of settlements. He was glad of the stillness that peace had brought with it. The prospect of spring, when trees and plants would blossom throughout Gerdlegard, was exciting.
All Gerdlegard will be covered in greenery for the first time in 1,000 cycles. After everything we've been through, it has to be a good omen, he whispered in her ear. It was red, the color of love, so it must mean something good. Come on, let's find the others. We've got something to celebrate.
Hand in hand, they made their way down from the Black Saddle, whose looming presence had lost its terror for the dwarven folks. They were halfway down the steps that led into the stronghold, when a second streak of light flashed above them. Unseen and unnoticed, the comet sped toward the west. Still shining brightly, it dipped toward the earth, sailing through the clouds and leaving a deep red trail in the sky. At last it disappeared on the horizon beyond the Firstling Kingdom. It hit the ground with a muffled thud, sending a shudder through Girdlegard. Even the Black Saddle trembled. Then everything was quiet. Dramatis Personae. Dwarves. Firstling Kingdom. Xamtis Stubbornstreak II, of the clan of the Stubbornstreaks, queen of Borengar's folk. Belindis Steelfinger, of the clan of the Steelfingers, blacksmith and custodian of the gates. Secondling Kingdom. Gundrabur Whitecrown, of the clan of the Hardrocks, high king and leader of Beroween's folk. Belendaline Onearm, of the clan of the Firmfingers, counselor to the High King. Bavragor Hammerfist, of the clan of the Hammerfists, mason. Boendal Hookhand and Boindil Doubleblade, known also as Ironheart, of the clan of the Swinging Axes, warriors and twins. Thirdling Kingdom. Blank. Fourthling Kingdom. Gandagar Silverbeard, of the clan of the Silverbeards, king of Goimdil's folk. Bislapur Surestroke, of the clan of the Brawny Fists, advisor to the Fourthling King. Tungdil Bolofar, later Goldhand, foundling and Lotionan's ward. Goimgar Shimmerbeard, of the clan of the Shimmerbeards, gemcutter. Fifthling Kingdom. Giselbert Ironeye, father of the Fifthlings, king of Giselbert's folk. Glandalin Hammerstrike, of the clan of the Striking Hammers, warrior. Humans. Andokai the Tempestuous, Maegar and ruler of the enchanted realm of Brandokai. Jerun, bodyguard in the service of Andokai. Lotionan the Forbearing, Magus and ruler of the enchanted realm of Ionandar. Myra the Life Preserver, Maegar and ruler of the enchanted realm of Orimyra. Nudin the Knowledge Lusty, Magus and ruler of the enchanted realm of Leos Nudin. Sabora the Softly Spoken, Maegar and ruler of the enchanted realm of Saborian. Tugur the Fair-Faced, Magus and ruler of the enchanted realm of Toguria. Gorin, wizard formerly apprenticed to Lotionan. Frala, maid in the service of Lotionan, mother of Sunya and Ikana. Jolasin, Famulus apprenticed to Lotionan. Aiden, groom in the service of Lotionan. Rantia, Famula apprentice to Nudin. The Fabulous Rodario, actor and impresario. Fergus, theatre technician and propmaster. Namora, actress and companion to Fergus. Heel and Kerulus, peddlers. Vrabor and Fredegard, envoys to the Council of the Magi. Prince Malin of Ido, exiled heir to the throne of Idoslane. King Lothair, sovereign of Urgon. King Tilogorn, sovereign of Idoslane. King Nate, sovereign of Tabain. King Bruron, sovereign of Gauragar. Queen Umilante, sovereign of Sangpur. Queen Wei the Fourth, sovereign of Weyun. Queen Issachar, sovereign of Ran Ribastur. Others. Synthorus and Caphalor, Alfar from the kingdom of John Balsur. Liutasil, lord of Alandur, kingdom of the elves. Bashkug, Kragnar and Ushnots, orcish princes of Taboribor. Sverd, gnome enslaved by Bislapur. Acknowledgements. When I finished the final volume of my Uldart series, I decided to tackle a new project, Dwarves. It was a nerve-wracking prospect, Most readers have fixed ideas about how they like their dwarves to look and act. I didn't want to disappoint their expectations, but at the same time I needed to do something new. And so I went ahead and created my dwarves. I invented clans and folks for them to belong to, and I gave them particular talents and traits. I was careful not to stray too far from the traditional dwarf, but I added bits here and there, and I gave my dwarves a chance to prove their mettle. I didn't want them to be extras or sidekicks, so I made them into proper protagonists who outshine the humans and elves. My dwarves are the valiant defenders of Gerdlegard, true heroes who fight, and sometimes die, in the line of duty. I sent Tungdil and his companions on a perilous mission, and it had me on the edge of my seat. These pages are chock-full of dwarven dedication, passion, determination, exuberance, war, and death. Writing them was great fun, and with any luck, hearing them will be entertaining as well. My particular thanks go to those who made this a better and more interesting book. Among the first to see the manuscript were Nicole Schumacher, Sonja Ruther, Micah Sewering, and Dr. Patrick Muller. Their thoughtful comments and suggestions were immensely helpful, as always. Many thanks to translator Sally Ann Spencer, who taught the dwarves a new language. I would also like to thank those who allowed me to send the dwarves on their very own adventure. It was time the little fellows had their big chance. This has been a Hachette audio production of The Dwarves, written by Marcus Heitz, translated by Sally Ann Spencer, read by Matthew Wolfe, produced and directed by Dennis Kao, audio edited by Fred Koch and Jennifer Nix, mixed and mastered by Jeremy Wesley, production supervised by John Clem. The Dwarves is also available in print and as an e-book from Orbit, a division of Hachette Book Group USA. Text copyright 2005 by Piper Verlag GmbH Munich. English translation copyright 2009 by Sally Ann Spencer. Audio production copyright and published 2012 by Hachette Audio. All rights reserved. In accordance with the U.S. Copyright Act of 1976, the duplicating, uploading, and electronic sharing of any part of this audiobook without the permission of the publisher is unlawful piracy and theft of the author's intellectual property. If you would like to use material from the audiobook, other than for review purposes, prior written permission must be obtained by contacting the publisher at permissions@hbgusa.com. Thank you for your support of the author's rights. This audiobook is a work of fiction. Names, characters, places, and incidents are either the product of the author's imagination or are used fictitiously, and any resemblance to actual persons, living or dead, events or locales is entirely coincidental. The following is an excerpt from The War of the Dwarves by Marcus Heitz. The tail of the comet blazed red in the sky, showering debris large enough to crush a human house. The dwarves heard a drawn-out whistle, then an ear-splitting bang. The ground shook and trembled like a frightened beast. Plumes of snow shot upward, looming like luminous towers in the dark night sky. The air hissed and angry clouds of moisture rose from the vaporizing snow. Thick white fog wrapped itself around Boendal like a blindfold.
"To the stronghold!"
he commanded, realizing that watchtowers and battlements were no match for celestial might.
"We'll be safer inside!"
Bracing himself against the brazier, he tried to get to his feet. A moment later, one of the sentries was beside him, pulling him up. Boendal lost his bearings in the strange-smelling fog, but his companion knew the way without seeing. They ran, skidding and sliding every few paces, until they resigned themselves to crawling and pulling themselves forward on their axes.
"Quick, we need to—"
Boendal's command was cut off by a droning from above. He knew exactly what it meant. The battlements were about to be hit by a volley of burning rock. There was no time to shout a warning. The fog had already turned a muddy orange, darkening to black-streaked red as an unbearable screeching filled the air.
Vrakas, protect us!
Boendar closed his eyes as a gigantic slab of burning ice hurtled toward him. A moment later, it slammed into the solid stone walkway. Boendar heard faint shrieks as dwarves in front of him tumbled to their deaths. He couldn't see where the rock had landed because of the fog.
Turn back!
Shouted Boendar, crawling away from the shattered stone. Hampered by his injured back, he longed for his old agility.
To the northern walkway!
Flagstones quaked beneath their feet as the colossal towers swayed like reeds in the breeze. Cracks opened in the groaning masonry and sections of battlement plummeted to the ground. The bombardment continued as they hurried along the northern walkway to the highest tower. They came to a halt at the bridge. The single-span arch construction was the only way into the kingdom and the safety of the firstling halls. Beneath the bridge was a yawning chasm, 200 paces deep. A gusty wind swept the watchtowers, chasing away the mist. At last they could see the gates leading into the mountain, and safety.
Vrakas for Fend!
Cried one of the sentries, who had turned and was pointing back at the lifting mist. The fortifications of East Ironhald were in ruins. Only 4 of the 9 towers were still standing. The rest had been crushed, toppled, or flattened, leaving 5 rings of masonry protruding like rotten tooth stumps from the ground. The mighty ramparts, hewn from the mountain by dwarven masons, were riven with cracks wide enough for a band of trolls to breach the defenses with ease.
Keep moving!
Boendal urged them.
You can worry about the ramparts as soon as we've made it to safety. Walls can be rebuilt.
He and the others had barely set foot on the bridge when they heard a low rumbling like distant thunder. Then the earth moved again. The falling boulders from the comet's tail had shaken the fortifications and caused the walkways to quake. But this time the tremor was deeper and more powerful, causing walls, towers, dwarves, peaks and ridges to shudder and sway. The red range had stood firm for thousands of cycles, but nothing could withstand the violent quake. Most of the dwarves were knocked off their feet, hitting the flagstones in a jangling of chainmail. Axes flew through the air and clattered to the ground, while helmets collided with stone. 2 of the surviving towers collapsed with a deafening bang, raising clouds of dust that shrouded the rubble. Boendal thought of the vast orb that had passed overhead. He had only one explanation for the tremor. The comet had landed in the mountains to the west, sending shockwaves through the ground. He tried not to imagine what was happening in the underground halls and passageways, how many firstlings were dying, how many dead. The rumbling grew fainter, the quaking subsided, and at last it was still. The dwarves held their breath, waiting for what was next. An acrid smell burned their throats. The air was thick with dust from the ruined masonry, and smoke rose from scattered fires. The fearsome heat had passed with the comet, and it was snowing again. From a distance, the stillness could have been mistaken for tranquility, but it was born of destruction. Death had visited the Red Range and ravaged the Firstling's home.
Vrakas had mercy,
whispered Boendar's companion, his voice as sorrowful and defenseless as a child's. Boendar knew what he was thinking. Dwarves were fearless. They threw themselves into battle regardless of the odds and defended Gerdlegard against the invading hordes. Their axes and hammers brought death to the most monstrous of Teon's beasts. But no dwarven weapon could match a foe like this.
We couldn't have stopped it, he told him. Even Vrakas can't catch a falling star.
Leaning over the bridge, he realized that the base of the tower was seriously unstable. Cracks, each as wide as an outstretched arm, had opened in the stone and were spreading through the masonry. He could almost hear it breaking.
Quick, before the tower collapses and takes us with it!
He set off quickly across the bridge, followed by a handful of survivors. They were almost halfway when a large clump of snow struck Boendal on the neck.
What a time to play stupid games!
He brushed away the snow and kept walking. The second snowball hit his left shoulder, showering him with snow. He whirled round to confront the hapless prankster.
By the hammer of Beroween, up!
Before he could finish, the dark sky opened up and pelted him with clumps of snow. Powdery snowballs hit the bridge, his helmet, and the other dwarves. Boendal heard a faint rumbling, and the bombardment intensified. He knew what it was. The mountains, not his companions, had started the assault. Boendal's stomach lurched as he scanned the peaks around him. Although the comet had hit the ground many miles to the west, it had called forth a monster that lurked above the dwarven halls. Boendal had seen it hundreds of times while standing watch in the Secondling Kingdom. The White Death, roused by the rain and the tremors, had mounted its steed near the summit and was galloping down the slopes. In the space of two breaths, it filled the mountainside, crushing and consuming everything in its path. Like a vast wave, the snow rolled down the mountain, throwing up powdery spray. Everything before it was toppled, stifled, and dragged on its downward plunge.
Run!
Shouted Boendal. His legs seemed to move of their own accord. After a few paces, he slipped over, but someone grabbed him by the braid, and he stumbled to his feet. Two dwarves slotted their hands under his armpits and pulled him on. Driven by fear, they stumbled over the bridge, more skating than running. Even as the gates swung back to admit them, the White Death reeled them in. Hurling itself triumphantly over the precipice, it fell on the dwarves like a starving animal. Its icy body smacked into the bridge, knocking them into the chasm. Boendal's shouts were drowned out by the roaring, thundering beast. His mouth filled with snow. He clutched at the air until his right hand grabbed a falling shield, which he clung to as if he were drowning. His descent was fast, so fast that his stomach was spinning in all directions. He had no way of orienting himself in the snow, but the shield cut through the powder like a spade. Tiring of the dwarf, the White Death dumped him and covered him over. The weight of the cold beast's body pushed the air from his lungs. A little while later, Boendal blacked out. Night descended on his consciousness, and his soul was ready to be summoned to Vrakas's smithy. At least it would be warm.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.